Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast. And each week I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time encouraging you as you listen to reflect on your own leadership journey. If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so for free on iTunes or on Castbox. Look for the Leadership Journey Podcast, and it would be great if you're able to take a moment to leave us a review. This week, I'm talking again to Russell Burney. If you've missed the first two parts of my conversation with him, you can catch up with them either via the blog, yourleadershipjourney.net, or on iTunes or Castbox. In this episode, Russell talks about some of the factors involved in bringing change. He talks about some of the challenges he's faced in ministry, and he talks about retirement and some of the main lessons he has learned about spiritual leadership. Enjoy the podcast. Russell, welcome back. I think you've got more than you bargained for, and my agent will be in touch with your agent about the fee in due course. We talked at the end of the second podcast, we talked about you going to Highkirk. We talked about that sense of introducing change, some of the things that you'd been learning about every member ministry and so on, bringing that in. And I want to talk a wee bit about, we also talked about the worship ministry, but I want to talk a bit more generally what advice you would give to people who are trying to be agents of change in a congregation or even in an organizational setting. What are some of the things that you've learned that you would want to share with people?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is that change can be very painful. Not only for the people involved, but for the change agent, mm-hmm. who in most churches would be the minister. Mm-hmm. First of all, he has to be confident that the change that he's proposing is reasonable and right, that there's no point in changing something if it doesn't need to be changed, or changing something for the sake of change. Mm-hmm. That's not the object of the exercise, whatever. The change must be for the better, and therefore it must be thought out, and some degree of, in a sense, prophetic insight must be needed, mm-hmm. that this is what God wants you to do, not because of what you want to do. There was a certain degree in my thinking that I wanted to have a church that my three daughters would feel comfortable in, mm-hmm. and that their friends would feel comfortable in, as well as my parents, mm-hmm. and contemporaries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the big issues about change is that it's often a pressure, mm-hmm. From peers and otherwise, mm-hmm. that you have to do this, and change is brought about when really that's not the right way of doing it. I always looked upon change dependent on the membership of the congregation. And if you think, Alan, of a compendium where at one end, there are four groups of people in each congregation, mm-hmm. and they can roughly be divided into, on one hand, there are the traditionalists, mm-hmm. there are the conservatives.
Mm-hmm. Who are not as traditional as the traditionalists.
No, yeah. No. But I'll explain that just, mm-hmm. in a wee moment. And then there's the progressives, mm-hmm. and then on the other wing, you've got the radicals. Now, the traditionalists are a very difficult group. Their attitude to change is over my dead body, and you have to be strong enough to say, well, I hope it doesn't come to that. The conservatives like things as they are, but they know that there's a need for us to move on, and they'll, because you're a fairly nice guy, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
You can persuade them.
Yes, yeah. You have to persuade them, and they know that what you're doing is for the good of the whole. Mm-hmm. You've got the progressives. Now, really, they'd like you to go a wee bit quicker. They would like a bit more change, mm-hmm. than has been the practice or what is being proposed. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the, but they're okay.
Yeah.
Then there's the radicals,
mm-hmm.
and you'll never satisfy them. Mm-hmm. They will be up and away anyway, because mm-hmm. you can't go quick enough for them. Mm-hmm. Change has to take place before they ever get there.
Yeah.
And but they're stuck with me, so they have to. There's no point. Mm-hmm. And you know, you'll never be able to satisfy those two extremes.
The two extremes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the two in the centre, you can. Mm-hmm. And they can work together. And I believe that that's your entry point into change, working with that group of people. Mm-hmm. On the whole, the other two, if you're a minister and you're listening to the podcast here, you'll probably retain most of the traditionalists because they've nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
But the radicals are a smoking gun. You're never quite sure what's going to happen
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's what we did in Highkirk.
Yeah.
And I worked with those people, and we did change. It was painful mm-hmm. at times, but the pain was vastly covered by the encouragements that we had. Mm-hmm. Absolutely tremendous. I hope the present minister realises just how difficult it was to get the position that he's in. But now he's probably in the position of looking at those four groups and working with those two centre core
yes.
in order to bring about more change, because society has changed.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that we as a church have to be pressurised into change, but people are thinking differently. Mm-hmm. Issues are different, completely
yeah.
different.
Yeah.
In many respects, I'm glad that I'm not ministering in that way today, mm-hmm. but and I know that there are lots of people are struggling with this, but take hope, because change can be a beautiful thing as well as a painful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super. Thank you for that. It's very practical. There's a lot to think through there. I think what I'll actually do, you know, those of you listening to the podcast, James Lawrence has written some stuff on this in his book Growing Leaders, and I'll put up a little chart if I can manage it that kind of captures this picture of the continuum with the four types of people.
Yes, continuum. Did I say compendium?
You did.
Sorry,
that's
about
all right.
That.
No problem. Yes. That's fine. What about some of the other challenges and things that you big leadership learnings that you had during the time in Highkirk? Were there other major headbutting type things?
Yes, there were major challenges. Some of them were personal. Discouragement, for example, you know, in the early 90s was a time when I almost gave up my ministry. I was down. Some might describe it as a burnout. I'm not sure if it was or not. I certainly didn't seek or find help in that time. It was something that I just had to go through. I think it was just discouragement, and I desperately felt the need for personal renewal in my own life, and it led me eventually to enrol in Gordon Conwell.
Right, that's what you talked about
at the beginning,
on the first part of our conversation.
I remember walking along the Galgorm Road in old Galgorm Road in Ballymena with my wife, with Arlene, mm-hmm. and just talking to her about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her saying to me, "Well, Russell, whatever you do, I'm right behind you. And if you want to go into teaching, then you apply, and I can double up in what I'm doing, and we will get there." But instead of that, I think God led me to think about doing further study.
Mm-hmm.
And the one area in which I would have some control over would be doing a doctor of ministry degree. Now, it wasn't possible to do it in the British Isles at that time. So I consulted a friend of mine over in America, a minister over there, and he said, "Well, Russell," he said, "you know, you could go to Fuller. It's in California, but that's very far from you. Or you can go to Princeton, likely academic, I'm not sure if it would fulfill what you're looking for in this. I would recommend that you go to Gordon Conwell, approach them and see what." Well, it was the best decision I could possibly have made, because it was a warmly evangelical institution.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so helpful with bursaries and whatnot. And it was really on the the end of the runway into Boston. So a car was waiting for me and brought me to the residence. And I did went over and did three or four residencies there, and eventually ended up with a Doctor of Ministry degree. And that was a great help to me in terms of the change that we've been talking about. It was just so exciting, because everything I did had to be in a ministry setting. I was accountable. It was great. But it also fulfilled the purpose of being renewed.
Because there's an issue there, isn't there, that in the middle of a long ministry, it is important to stay fresh, to stay renewed. It can be very easy to reach a certain point and then to begin to coast, a bit like an airplane on the glide path, which isn't particularly good for the individual, and it's certainly not good for the people for whom the individual is responsible. So is that the kind of thing that you would you recommend something like that?
Oh, totally, because when I was being interviewed for High Kirk, and they asked me all the questions, very probing questions, and then they said, "Have you anything you want to ask us?" And I said, "Yes." And I said, "You've been asking me about how I intend to minister to you. Now I'm asking you, have you any plans of how you're going to minister to me?" And there was a stunned silence. And the clerk of session, who afterwards became a very close, and still is a very close friend, he says, "Well, Mr. McCaughey was here for 36 years, and he had no complaints on that." It's an answer to that effect, you know. Not exactly what I was looking for. But in effect, they did. They gave me time off. They gave me time to reflect and to study. And I used to go into Union College on a Thursday and work. Of course, I used to get up also at 5:30 in the morning to get study done before I would start the day of visiting and preparation and all of that. So when I mentioned the need for renewal, they came on board. And I do feel that there are those moments. And what a need there is, Alan, for sensitive men and women in leadership to recognise the signs of a minister beginning to sink a little. You know, and he needs help. He needs held up just a wee bit, and to talk to him about what he needs. You know, what I remember the clerk of session coming whenever my daughter was 21 and was in New York, and we couldn't afford, both of us, to go over and share that birthday with her. So Arlene was to go, and she did go. And they came down, and the session had met and said they felt that I should be going. And they paid. I went.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, that was just so practical and good in terms. I would, just in reflection, you know, maybe that's what I was teaching, but this somehow or other rebounded on me, you know.
Yeah, they were getting it. But yet...
That was the challenge. That was the personal challenge. Yeah. So there are other challenges.
Yeah, talk to us a bit about, I mean, there was what at the time I think became a fairly well-publicised challenge that you faced. Let's say it was around July. Can you talk about that?
Well, I talk about it with a heavy heart. And that, I was the most surprising person that I should enter into that particular controversy, because I come from
so this is to do with the Orange Order.
This is to do with the loyal
and
orders.
So on in the church.
Yes, it was. And it was a very painful time. For all of us, because in the situation in which we're living, people have taken sides and the lines have become hardened, and there were so many red lines, as we talk about nowadays. But I would shy away from confrontation. I wouldn't enter into it easily. But if I did enter into it, it would be for a reason. And this was really... I suppose it was a Luther stand, you know, here I stand, I can do no other. When I was in Newry, this was not an issue. Whenever the Orange Order had their annual service, which was traditional, and they came to the church, and I preached, sometimes I bit my lip, But I did all that I reasonably could be expected to do and made them welcome. I remember preaching at an Orange service out Rathfrynon way, and this wee man came up to me at the gate, and I thought he was going to challenge me about something. I say, he says, "I've heard better. I know there have been better sermons preached, but I haven't heard them than today's sermon, Your Reverence." And so I went along. But then there came a time when the situation was so bad politically that people became hard and the organisations became hard. And instead of coming to a service and listening and whatnot, they made a definite decision that they were going to carry flags and emblems. They didn't do that before.
Mm-hmm.
And not even in Ballymena.
Mm-hmm.
But they had made the decision that they were the district and the individual lodges that they were carrying flags, including the Ulster flag, Orange symbols, and insignia, and the Union Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And the minister was told he had to receive these,
mm-hmm.
and at the end of the service, give them back.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was a step too far. For me, it was a gospel issue.
Mm. Why do you say that?
I had always intended and always planned and always envisaged a church where it was neutral ground, it
mm-hmm.
was safe ground, it was the place where the people of God met.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place to which people of every denomination and none could come. It was a place where people of different and varying political viewpoints
mm-hmm.
could feel at home and feel the warmth of the Spirit of God at work in that place.
Mm-hmm.
For me to align myself with one political viewpoint, which I might share,
mm-hmm.
but to align myself publicly, but not only me, but my church,
mm-hmm.
with that political viewpoint was a step too far.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was to compromise the gospel. It was to enter into the kind of for God and Ulster mentality, which I've always looked upon as a supreme blasphemy, to put Ulster on the same level as God, as equal partners.
Mm.
That is not on.
Mm.
It is for God and God alone
mm-hmm.
and his glory
mm-hmm.
that we do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was being told, rather than ever been asked,
mm.
that this was the way it was to be. And my session was made up of some very good men. And a number of members of the loyal orders were in that, and I put it to them. And if I hadn't got 2/3 majority, and we had to put it to a vote, I never liked votes,
mm.
but I had to do this. If I hadn't received the 2/3 support, I would have resigned
mm.
over this matter. I got that and more. It says so much for the leaders that after the pain, and there was a lot of pain, when pain seems to be coming into our podcasts a lot, after the pain had subsided a lot, those men were still with me
mm.
and came along the whole way. And Alan, I think God really honoured.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part of leadership that we don't often talk about. You see, we choose so often through peer pressure to highlight issues.
Mm.
In our case, in our church, when I was going through it, was baptismal and Lord's Supper discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was up on their high horse about this. But I felt often this was dishonest, because the real issue was living in a divided society, witnessing a divided society and witnessing to a divided society. And we had to do that as a body, the body of Christ,
mm-hmm.
and not identify Christ with one particular emphasis in our community. So that was the big
mm-hmm.
challenge that, that I had to face.
And
but I'll just complete
yep.
this. I think God honoured us, because mm-hmm. just in a year or so after that, we had a mission in High Kirk. when over 100 people made professions of faith, many of those people, including some who were caught up in this controversy, were brought to a new start. You know, it was a time when there was the horrible protests, and I was with colleagues was involved in that as well, and a difficult time for everybody. But that is an issue. It has to be, and I'm not sure, you know, we get around it, but sometimes...
But interestingly, I guess there would be people who would have seen some of your actions as a betrayal of the gospel. Where actually you did the things that you did because of your commitment to the gospel, that you wanted to be an actual witness to what the gospel does, that it's for everyone and that it brings people together.
Absolutely. But those same people would also... probably say that our men are not standing up for us. I mean, that was an accusation that that was made, you know, comparing us to others, and would say our ministers are not standing up for us. You know, we don't have to stand up for constitutional convictions like that. Those are very important. I might hold those personally. But at the same time, when it comes to Christ, I don't want culture to encroach on my on biblical truths and personal beliefs.
So would you say, Russell, then, that there are times when a line has to be drawn on the sand? You mentioned Luther earlier. What defines those lines in the sand, and what happens if when they need to be drawn, if a leader doesn't draw them?
Well, I think there are some things, Alan, that we can compromise on. Compromise has always been a dirty word. But you can't compromise on truth. And to me, the context dictated where that line had to be drawn. The truth for me is the gospel, as revealed in Jesus Christ. The way, the truth, and the life. One who said to all men, come unto me, and all you who are weary. The whole invitation was for people to come to know him. And anything that would stand in the way of that. You know, in my particular case, at our evening services, which I would have had to cancel, by the way, to accommodate others, even though they would say, we'll join you at your evening service. That just transformed the evening service into something. At that service, there were people from different backgrounds, different denominations, different faiths who were coming. And for them to come in and find the whole paraphernalia that we're used to would have been a complete contradiction and a denial of the of my ministry, and definitely the gospel would be compromised. It's the context that determines where the red line is going to be in your ministry. There are others who identify other things. The same this position nowadays, I suppose, it's same-sex marriage. It's all the controversy that's around that. But in those days, and I would suggest still, is the issue that we've been speaking about.
The witness to a divided community.
Correct.
Russell, you've been retired for a number of years. An active retirement, and I know that initially, when you retired from Highkirk, that you had a number of years working as a pastoral associate in, in another congregation. What advice would you give to somebody who's coming towards retirement stage, you know, as they look ahead to that? What are some of the things that they need to be expecting and preparing for?
Number one is, when you're 65, and I retired when I was 65, that was in 2005, so with your maths you'll have no problem working out where I am at the moment. But I was fit. I was relieved to be retired at that stage. Maybe it would have been wiser if I had taken 6 months off and continued. Mm-hmm. In effect, that's what I did. Mm-hmm. Because at 65, coming up on it, I had a phone call from the minister of a neighbouring church mm-hmm. here asking would I become a pastoral associate. And I said, well, look, ring back in 6 months mm-hmm. and I'll be able to tell you. And for 6 months, I took off. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a congregation. I went to different places and I sat. By the time the 6 months was up, I was already well settled in the congregation mm-hmm. that I had been approached by. And
we can name it, can't we?
Oh, can I name
yeah,
it? Okay,
of course
that's
we can
okay.
name it.
And they're always open for
they're all going to be listening to
always
this.
Always open for new members, by the way.
Waringstown. Yeah, of
and
course.
Waringstown, I was very happy in that congregation, and so was Arlene, my wife. And we settled in there, and I started to work mm-hmm. in the congregation. And light duties, visitation, and preaching. More often than I had been expected to, or was I was expecting, and maybe that they were, but it was good. And minister took time off to do a D-min as mm-hmm. ministers do, and I held forth, and mm-hmm. it was very good. Mm-hmm. But then my boss retired. It didn't. He decided to go as a chaplain to the Royal School over in England, Exeter. And I felt that was my time to go, because one of the courtesy moves in our church over the years has been if the senior man moves, all the staff move. And so I decided mm-hmm. to give my his successor a free rein, and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And I think definitely you have still got an awful lot to give mm-hmm. In those 5 years, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And I think for anybody who's approaching that, first of all, go on a retirement course that I didn't go on.
Because it is now.
Mm-hmm. In our church, we have a retirement course, which everybody raves about. Go on that and keep active. I always was very a walker and a jogger and this thing, and I kept that going. Mm-hmm. Keep the mind active. Don't feel that life has ended. In fact, it is really, in a sense, it's a new stage and it's an exciting stage. Mm-hmm. I retired from it when I was 70 with the intention that my wife and I maybe would travel a wee bit, but family sickness ruled that out, and we weren't able to fulfil plans like that. Nevertheless, we were able to. We are now members of the congregation and well embedded into mm-hmm. it, and lovely people who have been very kind to us mm-hmm. and very kind to me now that I've lost Arlene. Mm-hmm. So it's been good. Mm-hmm. Now that hasn't answered your question, but it does give some
pointers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you have to keep the old mind
yeah.
so that when people ask you to do a podcast and you have no idea what a podcast is.
Yes, you discover. Okay, one final area to talk about here. I want you to imagine that you're sitting with your, let's say, 20, 25-year-old self. And, you know, that sort of career of ministry is out in front of you. What would be the things that you would say, key lessons that if your 25-year-old self could learn them, it would make the journey that bit more straightforward?
Well, wouldn't that be just lovely to be back at 25 again and to undo some of the damage you've done and to enjoy things which you weren't able to enjoy at the time? Well, I think I'd like to distinguish, you know, we've been talking about ministry and leadership. I'd like to distinguish between leadership and spiritual leadership. Now, maybe that's a matter of semantics. It might be, you know,
not at all.
To do so, it can free people from unrealistic expectation of some leaders. You know, you can read a lot of books about leadership, which have great ideas and great principles, but being a spiritual leader, and that's what you are when you go into ministry of the ordained kind, it requires some special qualities and practices. And I think I've learned that to be an effective spiritual leader, your walk with God must be consistent. That's the first thing. David said, you know, in Psalm 119, your word I have treasured in my heart that I may not sin against you. And a disciplined daily walk with God, I think, is our best practice against falling. And taking time daily to pray and to read the Bible and guarding that time is our best practice. That's the first thing I would say, Alan. The second thing is that your personal priorities must be in order and they mustn't be allowed to slip. You have to work out those priorities. But you can also set the goal at 25, what your priorities are going to be. Becoming successful at the cost of a broken relationship or a broken home or broken health just isn't worth it. And maybe finally, you must be accountable to someone. That's something that I didn't really learn. It wasn't suggested to me. It wasn't in my theological training, as so much wasn't in my theological training. Someone who knows you well enough to pray with you, to strengthen you in your vulnerable areas, to rebuke you when necessary, and to counsel you on important decisions that you have to make. Someone has written that authority without accountability leads to disaster. And you can be freelance and you can be as successful as you can and you can be all things to all men. You can be the top dog. But believe you me, you're only a step away from disaster. So that's something I think that you have to do. Maybe you could just say this. This would be something else. You must dispense in ministry and in leadership with this idea of status. So many enter the ministry because it's still the respectable thing to do. You're still a public figure. Maybe that hasn't been really thought out too much because you have to remember whose you are and whom you serve. That you're a servant of Christ. If it was good enough for Paul, it's good enough for us and Bernie. And Paul even went further than that. He said, you're a slave. Now, you can work that out for yourself. Now, looking back to the 25-year, it's okay, you can't put an old head on young shoulders. But how have I come to those fleeting thoughts? Well, certainly through experience, but also through failures. Through failures in many aspects of ministry and leadership. That's what grieves me. Maybe that's a wrong way to end our podcast, but it grieves me that I let the Lord down in situations where I should have known better. But the redeeming factor is I think I've learned from them. And so endeth the lesson, Alan.
Russell, thank you so much. You've shared so much of your story, so much wisdom, and you know through those years of experience, you earned the right to speak so directly to all of us who are listening, the way you've done. So thank you, and the Lord bless you, and encourage you in the service that you continue to
thank
be
you
part of.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Leadership Journey podcast, and thanks to Russell for taking the time to talk to us. Next week, my guest will be Roz Sterling. Roz is the director of Cleopas Ministries. In the meantime, have a good week.